Hello and welcome to New Horror Express. You're joining us once again for another bonus episode rounding up the Dead by Dawn Festival here in Edinburgh. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on this episode I am once again joined by my co-host, Frank Rose. Hi again, Frank.
Yeah, hey, thanks.
And in this episode, we are covering the feature films, the new feature films that were shown at the Dead by Dawn Festival. There was a total of 7, which was slightly less than normal. I think there's usually about 8 or 9 that are shown, but I think because of the great wealth of shorts, which I'm not complaining about, there were 7 films. And we, Frank and I, shall be discussing our top 3 in just a little bit. But before that, we just want to mention the other 4 films that were shown and tell you a little bit about those. So there was 4 other films. The Brazilian film, The Night Shifter, a Canadian slasher film called Incredible Violence, a Danish survival thriller, Colorhead, and also we rounded off the last new film to be shown, You Might Be the Killer. Now, none of these made our top 3, but I think generally we liked most of these pictures.
Yeah, I agree. I thought all the new features this year were pretty strong. While they didn't make the list, they were also worth seeing, I think.
I absolutely agree. I particularly, even though I feel like You Might Be the Killer, I've actually seen twice now, and I had a good laugh both times. The Colorhead, I thought it was excellent. I thought it was tense. I thought it was claustrophobic. It was a kind of close run thing of leaving that out. Of the other two, I wasn't quite so keen on the other two. I still thought they were okay. The Night Shifter, I thought that was okay, and Incredible Violence, it was, yeah. Again, I thought it was okay, but there was parts of it that I dug, and parts of it that I wasn't so sure about. And but it was certainly it's very interesting because we had 2 films in You Might Be the Killer and Incredible Violence that were very, very meta. And Incredible Violence even more so than You Might Be the Killer. So what were your thoughts on the four?
I think I felt similarly to you. Cutterhead, I really enjoyed, and that almost edged onto my top 3.
Yeah.
It's another thing that's kind of horror adjacent, but I just thought really, really interesting movie, and really, really well made, quite tense, especially if you're claustrophobic. The other ones, I think You Might Be the Killer, I thought was a lot of fun. I think that's one that will probably, I think that's easily a rewatchable one because it's got lots of, callbacks and stuff. So that was quite a fun movie, and
if anybody listening wants to check out You Might Be the Killer, it is currently available on streaming on Shudder in the UK as well as in the US and other territories. So it's kind of across those platforms. If anybody wants to check it out over there. Anyway, continue your opinions on the other two as well. Sorry, Frank.
That's cool. Yeah, and I think the others, well, they were solid movies, but I didn't I didn't, you know, enjoy them as much as my top three. Like you said, Incredible Violence was incredibly meta, and yeah, some parts of it I thought worked better than others, but it did some interesting things. Yeah, and The Night Shifter I thought was quite, you know, for a first film, I thought it was quite a stylish movie. It was quite cool. I think I enjoyed the first half more than the second half, but I thought it was really, that was also, I thought, you know, a really solid film that I enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was a kind of recurring theme of the festival across the weekend, that of the seven pictures, six of them were debut features. And yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty impressive debuts. You know, all round. The only one that wasn't a debut was You Might Be the Killer. Brett Simmons, the director of that, has made a few films, including Husk and Animal. Husk being a killer scarecrow movie, which is I talked to Brett about, you know, having done two episodes with, if you are a long-time listener, you will know that I've done two episodes with Brett Simmons, both of which I would recommend that you check out. If you listen to this and have not checked them out, one of which that we extensively cover, You Might Be the Killer, in the follow-up interview. Anyway, shall we now head on into our top three?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so coming in at number three, and forgiving my pronunciation for things is going to be a theme over these two episodes. So number three is Tout le Dos du Ciel, which translates as, or has been translated for the international English speaking market, as All the Gods in the Sky, which was a film directed again by a first time director, Quarks. And it's a very interesting story. It's it does not go in the way, well, I don't know if you expect it to go in any particular way, because it's quite unique. It's been visually unique. The story it tells is quite unique, but it centers around a brother and sister, played by the brother is played by Jean-Luc Couchard, who horror fans probably will recognize from Calvaire or The Ordeal, and the sister is played by Melanie Gayos, and she's kind of bedridden, and he hears these, what he believes to be alien transmissions, and he's been taking care of his sister, who has become bedridden, is very, very disabled, and become bedridden because of an accident that the brother is pretty much responsible for. So it's a kind of family melodrama, but also a possible sci-fi, or also the possible just the mental breakdown of this central character. So tell us what your thoughts were, Frank, on Tout le Dos du Ciel, or All the Gods in the Sky.
Yeah, I really liked this. It was, you know, the performances in it were really good. It was beautifully shot. The story is really interesting. It's it's an unusual story. There are parts of it that are quite difficult to watch. So it definitely kind of like is pretty dark and disturbing. But you know, it goes in directions that you don't expect, especially towards the end. There's a quite surprising tonal shift that I didn't see at all, that I really enjoyed. And yeah, I just thought, you know, it's really, I was trying to think of, like, you know, movies that I would compare it to, and it's sort of hard because it really is quite unique in the way that it's structured.
And apparently it was obviously based on a short film called A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky, which is, we talked in the previous episode about Dead Birds being a kind of almost medium length film because of the being 35 minutes. And this was the same, this was a similar length to that, the short film. And so the director has kept all the bits of the short film, he's not reshot the bits from the short film, he just kept it and then added the rest. And I actually will have an episode with the director, Quarks, coming out later in May. I'll be coming out next month where you can hear more talk about this movie and his thoughts on the making of the movie and all that. But anyway, back to talking about the film. Yeah, so that's quite unique in itself, the kind of transferal from short to movie wasn't reshot, wasn't redone, even though I know from talking to him that he always intended it to be a feature film. I don't know, like, I can't think of any direct comparisons, but it did make me think of a lot of different things. You know, there's a kind of part, there's certain scenes that have an almost Lovecraftian element to it. There's certain, the way the kind of has all these kind of shots of the earth and the cosmos and the sun, and it kind of reminded me of the Tree of Life, the Terrence Malick film. There's like little bits of DNA of some of those kind of French New Extreme movies. There's different kind of strands here that are all kind of at play. But I couldn't directly compare it to X film, you know, like I couldn't directly compare it to anything. It's just that there is these various different bits of DNA of other films in the mix, but it's clearly, yeah, I think you can tell, you know, even without talking to him, even without having talked to him about the film, it's obvious that there is a very clear vision here. And it's very much his project. And it's interesting because, like, it's a visually stunning movie. And I think it does look very accomplished for a debut feature. It does, even though he's done a few short films, for a debut feature, it looks quite stunning. And I think you can tell that he has an artistic background. Quartz's was before going into filmmaking, was an artist and a photographer. And some of the way the shots are composed, there's a recurring shot of a phone on a wall, which sounds quite boring, but it's shot quite ominously, but it's very particular composition, a very strict style. So yeah, I think you can tell that. I don't know. Like, could you? Is that something you picked up?
Yeah, definitely. I remember us talking about his background at the festival, and I think you can see it in that, and, you know, how he kind of sets up shots, like both kind of the interior shots he does, and also there's a lot of kind of like some beautiful sort of like landscape shots that you get throughout the movie. Yeah, it had a really kind of, you know, distinct visual style that really worked. Yeah, and it had some, you know, really interesting elements, like the kind of the combination of something that's, you know, kind of like a very dark sort of family drama, mm-hmm. with the kind of contents of his hallucinations. They seem like things that could be from a completely different movie, but somehow having them kind of rub up against each other in the same story. I don't know. It worked for me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lot of, I can understand why, like, in terms of financial backers and stuff, and kind of any studio backing this or any, there could be a nervousness in terms of marketing, in terms of it does kind of hop genres quite a lot, and there is these various different threads going on that it could be a complete dog's dinner of a movie, you know, like there is a version of this movie that just doesn't make any sense, is a mess. But I think it's, despite having all these different elements, you know, the elements of him hearing alien transmissions, or, you know, what he believes to be alien transmissions, and then there's this kind of social drama of him, you know, in the workplace, and you know, it seems quite low-key, quite drama sometimes, and there's the real central relationship between brother and sister, and again that goes into that almost melodrama territory, but then there's a strong horror element and some of the kind of surreal dreamlike stuff it's a fascinating picture. And then, like what we said, it does have that kind of DNA of a lot of different things. There's a bunch of side characters that are kind of only in like one or two scenes that seem like very Lynchian characters. There is sometimes where he's kind of like, he's dreaming, or he thinks certain things are happening, or he's you know, kind of, his mind is fracturing, and he has these imaginations of all these kind of horrible body horror things that seem quite Cronenbergian. And yeah, but it all somehow works. Like, the pieces fit. It doesn't feel like random nonsense. Well, it didn't to me. Like, I'm sure there are some audiences would not appreciate it, but it kind of all fitted together in a surprising way, given all the elements that were going on there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's quite an accomplishment, because there was a lot going on in this movie. And that it does kind of come together as a whole is kind of really, it's an accomplishment on the director's part. And it also just makes for a story that I haven't seen before. These kind of parts all put together in this particular way. So.
And I think the performances are really good. I think Jean-Luc Couchard's performance is really good as the central character, Simon Dormel. You know, as he kind of unravels further and further, I mean, you get a real sense of that. And he's, you know, it's one of those things that I think he's not a likable character. He's not a sympathetic character, but you follow his story because he is like a compelling character.
Yeah. Which is hard to, it's hard to carry because the film is so dark. There are things that, you know, really, you know, are hard to watch, but you continue to, or at least I was throughout the film, I kind of continue to go along with him and see where he was going. And I think that, it's a difficult performance to kind of pull off that way.
I think, narratively, it's one of those things that, you know, quite often, like, you know, in Hollywood, they're always, you know, want a character you can kind of root for. And I think, you know, if you make a character unlikable, it can be hard to invest in that character and follow that character's story. But I think there is that thing of, like, if you make that unlikable character compelling enough, like, audiences will still follow that character. And I felt that there was enough there that I continued to, like, want to know where this guy would go. You know, because, I suppose you get kind of shards of sympatheticness kind of scattered throughout, even though he gets progressively less and less sympathetic. And he doesn't start that sympathetic to start with.
Yeah. And I think the movie does, you know, I don't want to give away kind of too much for people who haven't seen, but there's an interesting kind of inversion to the end of the movie that really kind of, I don't know, it had an interesting element of, don't know, just sort of kind of softening or making, you know, because I think you could kind of run into kind of a dead end with the narrative, but instead it goes in this completely different direction.
Because it's very interesting, and without spoiling anything for people who want to watch it after this, there is a point in the film which seems like a natural end point, but then it doesn't end. And it goes on, and we get this kind of almost epilogue just at the end, which is like, it could lead on to an entire different story. There's parts of that, what happens in that final section, that you're like, oh, what? Why are these people doing this? This could be expanded upon what the background is. And yeah, there's a lot of questions that kind of ending throws up, and there's a lot of things that you feel like could be, you know, if so desired, could be further investigated upon in like almost another story.
Yeah, it left me wanting, you know, I agree with you that sort of that, and it was an ending that kind of left me wanting more, in a good way. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't. we should clarify that it was 100% not a sequel bait ending. It just had a kind of slightly different. It had a different tone to it and a different vibe, and there was things that could be expanded upon. We mentioned the acting performance of Jean-Luc Richard, but I also want to mention the acting performance of Melanie Geddos, because she does not have any dialogue and spends most of the film, spends the film bedbound, and yet she is quite a kind of captivating figure throughout the movie as well. You know, she like the. You know, there's a physical performance there that I would say, again, is just very good. And I was really impressed because Melanie Geddos, the actress, hadn't really done much movies before being cast in this. I don't think she'd really done any movies. She was a model. And she'd appeared in, like, before she starred in the short, she appeared in like a Rammstein music video and a few other things. She's since gone on to appear in one of the Insidious films, the last Insidious film that came out, Insidious, the Last Key, I think that one was called. Yeah. So what were your thoughts on her performance?
Yeah, I mean, I thought she was great. And that, like you mentioned, it's a really, because of the kind of the constraints that the story places on her, it's a difficult role to play because, you know, you've got to do kind of a lot with very little movement. And yeah, I thought she was really kind of, you know, she did a really good job. You really feel for her. I think, you know, that in a lot of ways, it's, you know, it's kind of arguable that she's the protagonist rather than, she's definitely a much more sympathetic character. All of the acting was good, because there was also, she was really, really great. There was also a child actor that was in it, and it's kind of involved in a subplot. And she was, you know, I thought the child actor was quite good as well. So I think it was just a number of really, you know.
Yeah, there was a number of standout performances, and even some of the side characters were even some of the side characters were quite well drawn. The little girl, Zoe, who was played by a young actress called Zeely Rickson, she had I don't want to spoil anything in this story, but her uncle in the film was played by Thierry Frémont, who's I know is quite a famous actor in France, he does a lot with his short time in the movie, and there's a few other kind of side characters like that who, you know, really stand out, you know, and make the most of their time on screen.
Yeah, definitely. I think you had mentioned that these, you know, a lot of the sort of like side plots that they have kind of characters that are, you know, a bit Lynchian, and I think that's a good way of referencing it, because they have a lot of kind of on-screen presence in the short time they're there, and a lot of them are quite menacing or deeply odd or both.
It's an interesting. I also think it's an interesting film, because it is one of those films that you watch it, and I really liked it, but it is a dark, intense, grim film. You know, I kind of hesitate to say that I enjoyed it. I kind of, you know, like I was captivated by it, and I was very much liked it. But it's, yeah, I'm not sure it's necessarily an enjoyable watch. Just, you know, it's. For anybody who's thinking about, you know, checking it out, I definitely warn them, it's not an easy watch.
Yeah, agreed. It was very worth seeing. I don't know if I'm gonna watch it again very soon.
I think it is one to, I mean, there is a lot of different things going on there, and I think there's a lot of subtext, and I think there's a lot of things of, you know, that some of the images, you know, like, you know, yeah, you're it'd be one to rewatch at some stage, I think, but maybe not straight away. It's a pretty heavy picture, but a very well done one. What was not a heavy picture, or well, in some ways, it was a very heavy picture, but not in terms of tone or or anything like that, was our number two film, the very not dark, very funny, Heavy Trip, which was a Finnish comedy. We seem to be enamored with Finnish comedies this weekend after our like of the Helsinki mansplaining massacre in the short sections. But Heavy Trip was a heavy metal comedy from directors Jussi Latio and Jukka Vidgren. I've probably mangled those names. I greatly apologize to both guys, but this was a whole lot of fun. I think the whole audience were really enjoyed this one, and I laughed a lot, and I know you laughed a lot, but tell us what you liked about Heavy Trip.
I was hoping this was going to be, a lot of fun, and it exceeded my expectations. It is a black metal comedy about, you know, a small town band trying to go play in a metal festival, and it is just yeah, it just works on so many levels. You know, it's the kind of all the characters are super you know, relatable and likable. The story is funny and you know, very in some ways dark and in some ways very sweet. If you are a music fan in general or a metal fan in particular, there are just tons and tons of in jokes. But I know we watched it with some people that, you know, don't really like metal, and they also thought that it was hilarious. So I mean, this was really obviously the crowd pleaser of this festival, and it was well deserved. Like, it was the funniest thing that I've seen in years, I think. Like, I was really taken with it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was in absolute hoots of laughter, you know, throughout the film. I thought this was, and like you say, we watched it with a couple of people who are not into metal, know nothing really of the culture of metal, don't like that music, but they still got into it. I think that in large part that is down to this thing of, like, it is one of those underdog stories of, like, you know, the band that makes it to the big, you know, and there's lots of movies like that that's about, like, a kind of underdog that gets to the grand stage of whatever, you know, like that kind of sports movie thing, you know, of the underdog team that gets to the grand final, or it, there is a bunch of those pictures, and it is quite conventional in a lot of the things it does. It also has, you know, a shy male lead, the character of Turo, that is, you know, pines after the kind of best looking girl in town, and you know, who happens to be dating the town asshole, and you know, it's again things that recur in a lot of different movies. That so it has kind of comfortable beats in it, but it does so much within that framework, and there's so many good gags in this, like a mixture of like great one-liners and visual gags. There's like some great bits of slapstick in this film. The lead character at one point fights a wolverine because he takes metaphors too literally. You know, like when the drummer like chases after the Norwegian promoter and like decks himself into his truck, just like runs right into the back of his truck when the guy breaks, and the previous bit where that Norwegian promoter, due to a hilarious set of circumstances, get covered in reindeer blood. You know, it's something that I can imagine really can only happen in Finland. there's so much good stuff, and I think it is on top of that, given like a whole extra layer, you know, if you are a metal fan, like, you know, because there's so many metal in jokes throughout the movie that but I, again, even if you're not into metal, like some of the jokes I think you can kind of, you can pick up on, even though you might not be aware of what the references are. Like the bit where the guitarist tries to come up with a new guitar riff, and then basically one of the other members of the band who ends up dubbing himself Zytrax, which we can talk more about. he basically just reels off, oh, that's the intro to this song, that's the intro to that song. And like, if you know the songs, it's funny, you know, if you know, oh, that's, you know, if you're a metal fan, you'll probably immediately pick up, you're like, oh, that's the intro to Walk by Pantera, or, you know, and then he says the line and that, you know, it makes it funnier because you've recognized that and you're kind of like, yeah, and it's funny just from that point of view of like, oh yeah, this guitarist is not coming up with anything original. He's coming up with bits from songs he really likes, and the bassist calls him out and has this like immediate recall of all the intros to all these metal songs. But again, that joke kind of works because you realize that he's obviously playing stuff from known stuff and not his own stuff. And so that joke, even if you're not a metal fan, I think it kind of works. And I think there's a bunch of stuff like that with throughout the movie.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's lots of stuff that's like, it's extra fun if you're kind of in on it. But even if you're not, I think it's quite accessible as a comedy. And yeah, I think that really works. I mean, if you like metal, I mean, it's got everything that you want. It's got, you know, it's got a lot of, you know, music scenes. It's got LARPing Vikings. It's got a really funny bit about border security that I was not anticipating.
I was not anticipating that because, like, it's one of those things where, like, it just keeps turning up the notch of, like, the gags and the what's going on. And then, like, the whole thing with the border guard, it just becomes so hilarious because I think it is. It just gets progressively, like you know, the most kind of pomp rock band, you know, like, it just gets bigger and bigger. And, like, it seems like a kind of, it, for much of its running time, it's quite a small-scale, small-town comedy. And then when they do reach the, you know, on their journey to reach the big gig, you know, going over to Norway, like, it really turns it up in terms of the scale, in terms of the, you know, like, it opens up and there's this crazed scene, crazy confrontation with the Norwegian border guard. And then there's this, like you say, there's this bit with Viking LARPers that, again, that is magnificent. And they end up riding on like a Viking flagship. And so, no, I wasn't expecting that as either, because I had very much thought it would stay in this kind of tenor of like this relatively small scale comedy, and then it just becomes like a broader, bigger, you know, like, really, to use that old Spinal Tap thing, you know, really turns it up to 11 in the third act.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think this is something that I think this is also going to be one that will just be super easy to rewatch.
I think
it's going to be kind of like I can easily see this being kind of like, you know, a cult hit and a late night favorite, because there's a lot there that I think will be funny even on a second viewing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think this is like perfect, like, midnight movie crowd watching. You know, or just perfect for like having friends around and watching late at night and with a few beers. And it, you know, or that, I think it's perfect for that crowd. And I hope it gets some like mainstream attention, because it's so fun. And I think it is one of those ones that if it got enough attention, could be like get a cult following. And I hope it does get the cult following. I believe it does deserve, because it's so entertaining. And as a metal fan myself, I feel like it has very much its finger on the pulse of metal fans and kind of understands the mentality of metal fans, and particularly with Zytrax, the bassist, who is just a deadpan joy, is like almost the embodiment of a certain type of metal fan, like quite a lot of metal fans of just like this kind of obsessive, borderline autistic weirdo who just like metal is like his whole world, and he can just instantly reel off any metal fact or any metal song or any album that you want right off the top of his head. I just all the characters are great, and I think they all kind of represent a certain part of metal, you know, like from the guitarist who's more of the kind of glam metal, and the drummer who's like the kind of just a cheery kind of metal fan who just has a kind of pure joyful love for metal, but and life. And then the lead singer, you know, who again represents again a slightly different take, and yeah, I thought they were like perfectly etched out. You could clearly tell that the writer directors have a love for metal and are metal fans themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think it definitely shows that it's kind of like clearly a labor of love, and that they were, you know, they didn't choose to make it, you know, something that's a metal comedy randomly. I mean, there's a lot of kind of like, you know, deep cuts in there for the fans. So,
yeah. Oh dear. I think, and there's like, I mean, we could literally spend the rest of this episode just reeling off like funny scenes from this movie, just like all the kind of little individual moments. The gig in their hometown that doesn't go right. But the bassist is like happy with it because you know it's scandal and controversy, and just like all the classic black metal bands, you know, the promo shot that they try to take in front of the speed camera, you know, somebody reciting Dio at a funeral, you know, it's so many moments, man, so many different lines, so many little different scenes. I really love this. I really love this film, and I'm almost surprised that it didn't end up being my number one. I do feel the same way.
Yeah, I did. I was quite conflicted. I think I easily could have made it my number one, but I think my number one pick was one that I really did love, and I was also sort of consciously thinking. I was like, I need to pick a horror film this year, because last year my top pick was a documentary, which I felt was, well, I thought it was deserving. I was like, you know, that's, I want to make sure that kind of give attention to, well, I love having kind of like, you know, the horror adjacent stuff, and that was, I was kind of consciously thinking that, you know, I want to make sure that I vote for a horror movie this year, just to show the love for, you know, the center of the stuff and things that are creepy as well as just awesome and fun like this was.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I was conscious of that as well. I think that was in my head of last year. If you've listened to my roundup episode from last year, anyone, you will know that I voted for, and the audience winner was Dave Made a Maze last year, which was a comedy, again, horror adjacent. It had some horror references, but it's a comedy. So I think that played into my thinking as well. But yeah, I would definitely recommend people check it out. And as we have been discussing our number ones, it turns out this year, I think some of the people that we viewed, that we were also went to Dead by Dawn with, where I probably would have viewed it differently, but it just so happens that in this episode, Frank and I are completely sympathetical as we created the exact same top three, independently of each other, but we created the exact same top three. So, I should also mention that talking about the audience award, that it was All the Gods in the Sky that won the audience award. But it didn't win our award. The New Horror Express award goes to Lutz. That was our top film of Dead by Dawn this year, both myself and Frank. Do you want to? I'll tell the listeners that it was a German film, but with a Chilean lead and set in Chile, and directed by a German director called Tilman Singer, who, once again, it was another debut feature, as we previously mentioned. Six of the seven new features shown at Dead by Dawn were debut features, and this was another debut feature, and a pretty spectacular debut feature, done in a very, very 80s style, down to the kind of grainy film quality and everything. But it didn't, it was like, it didn't look like a film trying to ape the 80s style. It just looked like it was an 80s film. Like, it was, you know, like, it looks like Tillman has kind of gone back in time and made a film in 1982 and brought it back with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. It was really, it was, you know, just like, visually, it was incredibly good at kind of conveying that period without kind of making too much of it. You know, I mean, it was very 80s, but, you know, it didn't feel like it was, that framing was sort of like, you know, a gimmick or anything. It kind of disappeared into the movie, I think. And I think in some ways, you know, the way that it was done, having it in that time period kind of fit the story well. There are certain things that happen, you know, that you know, where it feels quite comfortable, like kind of situated in that time period. And yeah, I just thought it was really, really, really visually interesting, really good performances. The story itself, once you kind of look back on it, having seen the whole film, is not that complicated, but the way that it is told is super inventive. And that was really, it really drew me in.
Because like, once you have all the bits, you kind of, it's not that complicated. There's like a central mystery once you know all the things, you know, it's not like a completely surreal, off the wall, like, oh, you know, what did I just watch? You know, it's just all kind of images. You know, it's not like watching something like I know we've mentioned Lynch quite a lot. Lynch seems to come up quite often, but, you know, it's not like watching an Eraserhead or an Inland Empire where you're just like, yeah, he could be saying something. You know, like, it does have a plot. There is a plot there. The plot is not necessarily, you know, it's not all in the order that you would expect it to be. It's told in a very interesting way, and it kind of chops things up, and you're given bits of information at different times, and you know, so it might be kind of a little kind of hard to follow initially, but like, I think once you kind of get a handle on it, and especially, you know, in retrospect, thinking about it, you're like, actually, it's not a simple tale, but there's nothing overly complicated about it. It's just that, you know, strong visual element that might throw people, and it's told in a very particular way that might throw people, but once you get the kind of order right in your head, I think it's easy enough. But I think the thing about it was the visual stylings of it were just really amazing. And like you said, I don't think the 80s thing was overdone. I think it looks very 80s. I think it's very much of that mold, but I also, there's no heavy signposting, not signposting, there's no heavy like referencing of things, or like, there's no kind of winks to being like, oh, I'm kind of doing things a little bit like this, you know. The you feel like the director is very much doing his own thing, not necessarily paying tribute to any particular films, just doing his own film within that kind of 80s mold. Although it does end up feeling like certain things, like, I did get the sense of those films, like the Michael Suave films that are like Cemetery Man and The Church and the Sect. And then there's certain alien films, you know, like Earth-based alien films that, you know, body snatcher films, like in the 78 Invasion of Body Snatchers, the one with Donald Sutherland, The Hidden, films like that that I kind of brought to mind a little bit as well. Even to some extent, the scene early on, after the conversation in the bar, you know, with the two characters, there was even a tiny bit of Species, more artily done, but a tiny bit of Species or something like that in there. But it just, I mean, it looked incredible. And I think the thing that I was kind of taken with and surprised by was I thought it was going to be a bigger film, that there was going to be in different places. And the fact that it kind of mainly takes place in an interrogation room and what they do with that space and the sound design employed and the visual design employed to make that same room look and feel different throughout the course of that scene that is the kind of very much the centerpiece of the movie. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I wasn't sure where they were going with that, and you know, that in that entire part of the movie just kind of continued to surprise me as it kind of unfolded in kind of, you know, in different ways as the story progresses. And I thought there were also some really incredible performances that, you know, there weren't very many actors, but the ones that had particularly the psychiatrist, they had some pretty kind of, you know, intense scenes.
I think there's definitely some great performances within the film. And again, sorry, again, that seemed like one of those things that wasn't necessarily a reference, but again, it made me think of other things. The character of Dr. Rossini, the psychiatrist, who was played by Jan Luthart, he was very good. He had that kind of feel of like one of those Cronenberg characters of, you know, that kind of slightly distant, icy kind of, Ballardian thing that he had about that character. And I quite like that, you know, I like that thing, you know, like I'm a big fan of the books of J.G. Ballard, and I'm a big fan of, like everybody, I'm a big fan of the movies of David Cronenberg. But it reminded me of that. And I thought his character was fascinating and could be terrifying, could be very funny at different times in the movie. There was like a sly humor there. I also found the actress who plays the central character, Luana Velez, it's weird because like the character doesn't have masses of dialogue, probably less so than the other characters. Well, the like Dr. Rossini and the person that he first meets in the bar, the character of Nora, who knew Lutz in school, the actress who played Lutz was had a real presence about her. I felt like, you know, people talk about the camera loving certain people, you know. I think she is one of those people. I think very much like when she's on screen, your eye is drawn, and not just because she's attractive, literally just her screen presence. I think she has a very good screen presence.
No, I agree with that. And I think, you know, she was very well kind of cast for the role, because in a in a lot of times, it's kind of a very physical role, but also like in many parts, a very kind of understated one. Yeah. So she kind of has to do a lot with kind of, you know, relatively, you know, and kind of without kind of making sort of like big gestures or speaking a lot. And you're right that she manages to really kind of hold your attention as kind of the center of a scene, even if she's kind of like maybe a relatively kind of still part of it.
And I think that's often the case where you need that kind of, you need that balance in a film. Like, often when you get a scene where an actor is really going at it, really overplaying something, yeah, you need somebody working against that who's not also overplaying it. Like, so because the character, the doctor, is quite a big character, and it, like, just really attacks a lot of those scenes, that having that still point and that her kind of slightly underplaying things really works.
Yeah. So that, in her sense, so I just thinking about the kind of the different parts of that movie, because it's really like, it's, you know, because there are so few kind of changes of setting, you know, there are kind of distinct parts, and like that initial part in the bar where it records, that scene was really great as well. You know, it's kind of a setup, but it's, you know, between Nora and the doctor, because it kind of, you know, it's just kind of, it, you know, it seems like, you know, something that's relatively, you know, that it could be just set up, but on its own, it is kind of, even before it kind of heats up, it's kind of deeply, deeply weird.
Yeah, there's like a deeply unsettling, weird vibe. And like, it's like one of those, it's like a weird bar, slightly off kilter. The whole scene is, there's something slightly off kilter and unnerving about it, even before, you know, all the stuff, the kind of central meat of the story, the kind of, all the kind of demonic possession stuff, you know, before that kind of all bleeds out, there's something, you're kind of being wrong-footed right from the off. And yeah, I thought, you know, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, I really liked this movie. It was quite a short film.
Yeah, I mean,
it definitely left me wanting more.
Yeah, I think it could have been expanded upon. I mean, it's really short. I mean, like, it was the shortest film that played. It was only only has a runtime of about 70 minutes. So I would have happily had another 20 minutes or something on top of that, you know. Like, I mean there, yeah, and there's things that I think possibly could have been expanded upon or further developed or further investigated. I mean, I love it how it is. Like, I was really impressed with this movie, and obviously it was both our number ones. But yeah, I could have had more. I definitely could have had more. But then I suppose the movie is, I didn't feel unsatisfied though either. So I suppose the movie's doing its job, that I was still wanting more of these characters, more of this story, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. It didn't feel, you know, unfinished in any way. Like, I mean, it was quite, you know, I think it was well structured. You know, as it is, but yeah, I would definitely, like, I would like to see more by this director, certainly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would definitely like to see where Tillman Singer goes next. What his second feature will be. I would happily watch a follow up to this, but wherever direction he goes, if it's anywhere near as interesting as this movie, I'd definitely be up for that. But that's it. We've come to the end. We have completely rounded up completely rounded up all of Dead by Dawn for 2019. I've I had a great time at Dead by Dawn. I think it was a strong year, and as we mentioned in the other episode, the Lieberman retrospective was really good, and Jeff Lieberman was a really fun guest. It was really fun listening to him do his intros, and then it was great that we managed to have a bit of a discussion with him right at the very end of the festival. It was a really cool way to go out of the festival, you know, like, you know, he did a, for listeners who might not know or weren't there, he did a Q&A basically in the bar of the film house instead of doing it on stage, and people could come up to him, and then he came up to other people, and he sat at the table, Frank and myself and some other friends were at, and sat and talked to us for about 20 minutes and told us stories about his filmmaking career, and even though none of us are filmmakers, gave us some good filmmaking tips if we ever decided to go in that direction. I think it was a great time, and if people have never been to Dead by Dawn, you should go in coming years, and also you should definitely check out most of the films that were there, particularly Frank and I's top three. So do you want to say any last words on Dead by Dawn, Frank?
No, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think that this was a great year. There were really strong films. I had a good time throughout. So yeah, it was good, and I'm looking forward to next year already.
Excellent. Well, that's all for this time. Remember, you can always rate, review, and subscribe to New Horror Express on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever good podcasts are available. Also, please do give us a like on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. That's it. Check it out. See you next time.